and like the dirt would come out of the rock around these explosive places. And it wasn't just one circle. Like, there was many of these circles. So I'm here with my like construction grade earplugs. These dudes are just balling up Kleenex and putting them in their ears, and my ears were throbbing. I can't imagine the dudes actually exploding these hammers.
Hey folks, hope you had a good weekend. I'm your host, Mason Gravely, by the way. This is the Adventure Sports Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I know it was a kind of crazy last week, wasn't able to get an episode out Monday, but here we are with a brand new episode with famous YouTuber Mike Corey. Mike has a YouTube channel called Fearless and Far. Basically, you know, taking challenges, taking experiences to the next level by facing your fear and seeing how far that can take you. So Mike is someone who keeps himself in really a perpetual state of discomfort, a state of always getting outside your comfort zone. And some of the experiences he's had are just absolutely wild. Now, the best way to, I'd say, experience what he does is through his YouTube channel, but he tells some absolutely incredible stories on this episode. But it's so cool to take some of the stuff he's seen and actually see it yourself. So I definitely encourage you to check that out. Check out his Instagram. But yeah, Mike was an awesome to talk to. He's joining us today from Africa, Tanzania, actually, after just climbing Mount Kilimanjaro while carrying a watermelon to the summit, which is just, pretty crazy. Definitely pretty crazy. But before we jump in, I did want to let you know about a very new podcast that's out that I think you would also really enjoy from Expedia. It's now in its third season, and the show is called Out Travel the System. So even when we're not on an adventure, we're essentially pretty much always planning our next adventure, planning our next trip. And Expedia's Out Travel the System is really a show to help you plan better and help you basically stay inspired to travel, getting ready for your next experience. So this is everything from interviewing folks who have traveled all over the world to folks that are just getting into it, people at the destinations that you may be thinking of, as well as just really good travel stories. So if that's something you think you would like, definitely go check out Out Travel the System on your usual podcast player. Like and subscribe to get the latest episodes. And also, if you are needing a good luggage bag or a great backpack or any sort of bag or handcrafted item for a trip, definitely encourage you to check out Frost River. I've been very impressed by their customer service, by the quality of their shoulder bags, their luggage bags. If you are looking to buy something special for that person in your life who is an adventurer, who is also rugged, who needs something that isn't going to wear out on them on a few uses, check out Frost River, a great company. They've been around for a few decades now out of Duluth, Minnesota. And again, they make handcrafted bags, luggage bags, backpacks, all kinds of packs, apparel, and even accessories like wallets, pet gear, and travel accessories. And again, that is frostriver.com/adventuresports, and use the code ADVENTURE at checkout for free shipping on your order. All right, let's get into the episode. All right, folks, welcome to the show. You heard a little bit about Mike in the official intro. Mike, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, man. I'm here in Tanzania. Just finished climbing Kilimanjaro about a week and a half ago. That was a hell of an experience. And now just getting some office work done here and getting caught up on some calls.
Okay, so how is Kilimanjaro?
Well, I tell you, like, I don't do that much mountaineering. And I guess Kilimanjaro is probably the very bottom tier of mountaineering. It's not going to be very difficult at all. But I tell you, it was super cool. There's different routes you can take, obviously. Some are easier than others. We took probably the hardest route you can take. I'm sure you can just go up any side of the mountain and it's actually pretty hard. But this is like one of the harder actual paths. It's called the Western Breach, and it takes 7 days up and 2 days down. So a nice long nine-day journey. And the weather wasn't so great. It was kind of snowy, but ended up making it to the top. And I guess it's, I should probably tell you this as well. I decided to carry a watermelon. A little bit crazy. It totally is a bit crazy, a little bit silly. But I have a YouTube channel called Fearless and Far. On that channel, I like to challenge myself in strange, unique ways. That's part of the reason I'm on the podcast with you now. Just finding these different challenges or different locations or these things happening in the world that are a bit strange and different. That's kind of my jam. So I decided to try to see if I was able to carry a watermelon up on my shoulder to the top. And spoiler alert, I did it. It was hell though. It wasn't a good time. I don't recommend it to anybody, but it was a nice little personal challenge, although it being a little bit silly. I mean, hey, I think if I learned one thing in the past 12 months, I have to stop taking life so damn seriously sometimes. So this is my little challenge / treat to myself.
Did you get to eat it?
Dude, we gutted that thing on top. That was like the best part about it, was cutting it in half and then eating this watermelon. And I wasn't sure if it was going to rot or like explode from altitude. I didn't know. But all I know is that when we first bought it, it was a 15-pound beautiful thing. And then by the top, it was like brown and full of holes and scars. But you know, like Wagyu beef, that I think is Japanese expensive beef because they massage it every single day and it's supposed to be very tasty after. It was like the same thing. I carried it all the way to the top for 7 days, and then it was probably the best damn watermelon I've ever had in my entire life.
Hey man, I love it, man. As a fellow goofball, you know, kind of always doing something bizarre like that. That's just a great challenge, you know, to go right up our alley, is carry a watermelon to the top of Kilimanjaro. You might be the first. I recently talked to somebody, a guest on the show, who played a game of soccer almost at the top of Kilimanjaro, like an official size game of soccer with official teams and refs, carried goals and everything. And I just thought that was something about that mountain just draws wacky goals, apparently. That's I don't know, maybe it's the altitude.
That's cool though. Actually, that would work really well. So Kilimanjaro especially, like, you couldn't attempt something like that or like my little goal on like Aconcagua or like Everest or these monsters of mountains, because they're too technical. Like you can actually really, really hurt yourself or die on some of these mountains. Kili is one of those mountains. It's high. It's like, in meters, 5,895, which I think is probably pretty close to 20,000 feet. But it's not that technical. So you can goof around a little bit without, you know, really risking too much. But right before you get to the summit, there's like this big, like, it's a volcano, right? So there's this like big crater in the middle that's really flat. And then one edge of the crater is Uhuru Peak is what it's called. And that's the summit. So I could totally see people playing a full game of soccer on that flat area in the crater, because it's just like a big open snowfield.
I think that's exactly where they played it. It was right at about 19,000 feet, and it was right under the summit too, in a crater. They kept mentioning that, so that had to be where it was. But man, you know, take us back. I know you've told these stories probably 1,000 times recently, but you know, we just want to hear it again. For someone that just takes a watermelon up Kilimanjaro, you know, did you have an interesting childhood or something? Like, where did you grow up? What did you grow up doing? And what ultimately caused you to think like this? You know what I'm saying? Because it just doesn't happen necessarily.
Oh my God, that's the best phrasing of that question I've ever heard in my entire life. And yeah, definitely, someone who carried a watermelon up Kilimanjaro had definitely an interesting childhood. And I don't mind answering the question, because my entire life is kind of built, my travel style, my life, everything I'm passionate about, all kind of stems around what happened when I was younger. And basically, I grew up as a curious kid. I'm Canadian, from the province of New Brunswick, which is right above Maine in Canada. Very similar to Maine, actually, like lots of forests, kind of like simple folk. Grew up in a family of animal lovers. And so I always loved nature, animals too. I was always like flipping over rocks, looking for snakes and salamanders. And I guess my favorite thing as a kid was finding these misunderstood creatures and trying to explain why they were so damn cool. No one really listened, but I still really enjoyed it. And then I grew up, and I guess where I got the name Fearless and Far came from, it started because in my life I was fearful of most things. It all started when I was in grade school. I was in grade 3, and I had a teacher bring me up in front of the class and basically ridicule me in front of the students. Again, being a shy kid, I never was in front of the class. I wasn't the class clown. And that set my behaviors going forward. It set the mold. You know, you're so impressionable at that age. that was my interpretation of being in public, was like people laughing and being ridiculed and just like pain. So actually I had a phobia of public speaking for most of my life, from like grade three until just damn man, like 5, 6, 7 years ago. And now it's my full-time job. And so, I mean, the alias is Fearless and Far, but I'm definitely far from fearless. I'm actually probably one of the most fearful people. I just found out that you can grow a lot by doing the things that absolutely terrify you. And there was no one more scared of me than public speaking, but now it's my full-time job. I'm a podcast host, I'm a travel YouTuber, and I'm a host on a television show too. My entire career is speaking in all its various forms, except for maybe singing at this point. And I'm just a living, breathing example of what can happen if you do choose to pursue the things that absolutely batshit terrify you. And that's where the word fearless comes from. Not because I am, but I've realized that fearlessness is a choice, not necessarily a state of mind or a state of being. You can choose to be fearless. And whether it be asking for a raise or public speaking or whatever it is, these things that scare you, if you lean into them with your hands shaking and your heart quaking, amazing things can happen in your life. And so that's where it all came from. This event when I was a kid that could very well have been interpreted as a curse, right? Has now become an absolute blessing, only because I decided to lean into it. And I say I decided. It was more like life beating me around until I did something crazy, which was, you know, try to do these things I thought I couldn't. And so now you look at some of these videos I do and some of the adventures I have, and they might seem a little bit silly, but I just really like doing things that I think I can't. I really like doing things that people say I can't, because humans are amazing when it's down to the line. Like, if you really want something in life, you can definitely get it. And the more opportunities I have to teach myself that, and the more opportunities I have to show other people that, I'll take every single one, even if it sucks a little bit. I know the reward is much greater later.
Well said. Absolutely well said. And it's so amazing to me that someone with such, you know, charisma and just so great in front of the camera has dealt with that or started out that way. Do you still get that tingling, that sense of thrill maybe when you're getting in front of a group of people? You know, do those memories still come back at all?
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, I don't think it ever goes away, whether you you know, you almost drown when you were 10, or whether something like happened to me, these things stick with you. And I don't know if you can ever really shake it, but what you can do is you can change your relationship to the feeling, right? And I like how you said thrill, because very easily you can convince yourself, brainwash yourself, that these feelings aren't so different. I mean, if you took a look at the physiology of being like excited or being afraid, it's not too far off. And something I realized too, in the throes of it all, was that I was also just as scared of being scared. Like I would feel this feeling of panic come up, and I'd be like, "Oh no, I'm getting scared again. Oh no!" And it would just be like a wheel of fire burning down a hill, you know, faster and faster and faster. And then it was just all about being like, "Okay, well, I know I'm gonna feel this feeling, but I know it's good. Like I know it's trying to help me, but I don't have to listen to it. I know that it's here because of this thing that happened that I thought was a curse most of my life. It's actually, you know what, a little bit of a blessing, because it made me work on it much, 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 much more than anybody who is naturally gifted with that ability." And so knowing this and expecting a little bit of a tingle or thrill, let's call it, because again, it's not so different. I walk alongside it. It'll never be gone. Fear's a part of my life. But again, we've changed our relationship, and I think that's the most important thing.
How do you, or let me rephrase that, how often are you in a state of either fear or not anxiety that's too negative, but just that discomfort, that being uncomfortable? That's one of your biggest themes on your show and in your life. How much of your life are you actually in that state?
Yeah, well, in all honesty, I've been doing this now professionally for like 8 years, professionally trying to find things that freak me out. So after a while, you know, I don't have any natural phobia of spiders or heights or any of these things. I had a little bit one of claustrophobia, and then I decided to bury myself in sand up to my neck for 24 hours in the Philippines. And that was miserable, but made it through. And lo and
so
behold,
crazy.
I'm still here today. But you know what? Now I'm thinking about it, and we're on the, you know, Adventure Sport podcast here. One of the main things that changed everything is I was listening to base jumper named Jeb Corliss, who maybe some people are familiar with. And he was talking about fear on some interview, and it was some documentary or something. And the reporter's like, so you must be fearless. You must not be afraid ever when you jump. Again, the guy does like squirrel suit base jumping and stuff. And he took offense and he was like, no, I get afraid every single time before I jump. I can't get rid of it. Of course you're afraid. It's something scary, but you just have to learn to change your relationship. And then, you know, you learn like some of the most famous pop stars are terrified before they go on stage too. And you realize that the biggest difference between some of these people and yourself is just the decision to do it anyway. You know what I mean? So still now, like when I, like, for example, right before this podcast, I just did quite a big interview for a podcast I'm hosting called Against the Odds about tales of human survival. And we were talking about the Thai cave rescue that happened in 2018, or these guys, one guy in particular, but several guys rescued these boys from the depths of a cave, and everyone said it was impossible. So the guy's name was Rick Stanton, and I had to interview Rick Stanton for the podcast. And I was like, for me, he's a bit of a personal hero. And of course, you get the butterflies. You know, of course, you feel scared, especially someone like me who I don't have a strong background in this at all. Actually, quite literally the opposite. But again, you smile, you say the nerves are normal, and you go for it. And you know what? I messed it up the first time. But I didn't say, oh God, I'm so sorry, I messed it up. You just say, okay, let's do it again. And you do it again, like no big deal. One thing I learned, I used to be a break dancer for like 10 years. And one interesting thing that I learned there is if people only realize you mess up if you mess up. So you can be like, you know, spinning around doing stuff, fall on your back and like kind of slouch up and brush yourself off. And people are like, oh, he messed up. But if you spin on your back and then land and then like do a little twisty flip and land on your feet and then be like, ha ha. Then everyone's like, oh shoot. Okay. I guess oh, amazing. How that's so, oh, and then everyone thinks you're super cool. And the same thing is like life, man. Presentations or whatever it is, if you just act like everything's intentional and don't sweat the mistakes and don't dwell on them and don't acknowledge them, people often don't realize you've made a mistake. And that's like my dirty secret right there.
You absolutely can. You know, one of your dirty little secrets is that, but I've also heard you describe another secret of yours is just strictly perseverance. How much of what you've built and who you've become has just been trying and trying and trying again, even when it feels like, or if you've ever felt, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this stuff? But you keep going. How much of your success has been just that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been a lot of people out there who have done a lot more life-threatening stuff than me, where they really had to persevere against the odds. But like for a lot of my challenges and things I do and adventures I have, I people who know me well know that I meticulously plan a lot of what I do. And I think there's a word in Stoicism called fear setting, which is like you don't plan for, well, you plan for the worst things to happen without expecting the worst things to happen. And that's a lot of the adventures I do, a lot of the challenges I do is I really take time to think about what could go wrong. Again, not expecting, not with a pessimistic attitude, just be like a real attitude here. Okay, so what are the real things to worry about? And so often I'll find myself in these situations where I do kind of feel pushed up to my limit. But again, if it's not a life-threatening situation, you see, kind of realize that pain and discomfort are temporary, you know, and I guess I've got quite a fair amount of tattoos by now, and it's a bit of a similar thing. It could fiercely suck in the moment, but you know it's going to be over in several hours, and if you're not going to have any life-threatening issues or lose a limb, you can push through with various techniques. It takes practice. That perseverance is a muscle. You have to believe in yourself and trust in yourself, and also trust that you've done the adequate amount of preparation to be able to get yourself in these situations. You know what I mean? Like you can't just jump in. And I guess that's the last thing I want is people to see some of the stuff I do and just jump in with no training or preparation and expect like, you know, success or a different result or whatever. A lot of these things in life you really have to prepare for. But once you prepare for them, you know, you can really play a little bit. And that's kind of what I go for.
And it seems like in your story, just as in a lot of stories, it's been a steady climb to, you know, maybe not more extreme situations, but just, you know, bigger projects, more places, farther reaching experiences. But so coming from Canada, let's just jump back a little. What were some of those stepping stones for you to become a world traveler coming from New Brunswick? You know what I'm saying? Like, what were some of those major milestones that led to, again, carrying a watermelon up Kilimanjaro recently? It doesn't all happen at once.
Yeah. Well, my parents always pushed us to be curious. I've got three siblings, and my dad was a biology grad, and he had he was big into aquaculture, so yeah, like fish farming, but also big into the ocean. And we'd always go down to like the rocky beaches of southern New Brunswick, which is there's a place called the Bay of Fundy that's in between Maine and New Brunswick, and it has the highest tides in the world. If you can imagine 45 vertical feet of water rising and falling twice a day,
Oh my God.
What happens there. It's incredible. And so there, because all of the water gets like, it's like a bellows from the bottom of the ocean. It's all cold, nutrient-rich water. There's lots of sea life. But again, it's not that great for swimming because it's like 10 degrees Celsius. I'm not sure what that is in Fahrenheit, but freaking cold. And it's really rocky and everything. So we used to grow up in like playing in the freezing water, catching crabs, crawling up and down these like slippery seaweed, rocky slopes, and just adventuring and exploring and getting dirty. And that was a lot of my childhood. And again, going back to what I said about like really loving lifting up rocks and finding the creepy crawlies, looking in tide pools, same thing. And I just kind of didn't realize this connection just until about last year. But it's kind of the same thing I do now, going to these misunderstood places, doing these misunderstood things, and really trying to show people it's not exactly what you think. So in the past like couple of years, I've been to Pakistan, Turkmenistan, Mauritania, Venezuela, Bangladesh, some of these countries that people wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. But again, with this whole fear-setting idea from Stoicism and, you know, a good travel skill set as well, being able to see what it's really like in these places. There's still places I would never go because I do feel they're very dangerous. But there's lots of places that you can go if you have the right contacts and know who to speak to. I guess what I was always compare it to is like, if there's something terrible happen in Seattle, will you still go to Florida? And the answer is like, of course I would, right? Because it's a massive country. Well, why do we think that way about most other countries in the world then? You know, like if something happens in Indonesia where all of a sudden the entire country's off limits for like 10 years and tourism drops forever, you know, it's not a logical way to think about it. So I'm a really logical guy. I do some kind of crazy things, but most of it's quite calculated. So I took this idea of like, you know, the creepy crawlies, but the misunderstood things, I just love showing people. And I kind of transferred that into the travel world. And here we are going like and riding on the back of an iron ore train through the Saharan desert in Mauritania for 20 hours, or, you know, some of the other crazy adventures I've done.
So you following fear, you know, fearless and far, going fearless or going far, being fearless, what is a legitimate fear that you had going into one of your experiences, one of the projects, maybe an area, a festival that you legitimately were afraid of? And then you get into it and realize, oh, this isn't, you know, something to be completely afraid of. And it started to make more sense to you. Do you have any sort of example you could share?
Whenever I go to some of these more sensitive countries, like again, when I went to Venezuela or went to Turkmenistan or Mauritania, or actually I was in Yemen about a year ago, early February. The thing is, like before I go to these places, I set up cool local contacts. I make sure the situation's okay. I really do my research. And then if everything looks good, I go. But you can't fight that perception of a location that's been infecting your brain through media, you know, like, and all, of course you say you're going to like Turkmenistan and all people do is say all this concerning stuff to you, but they've never been there. They don't know. They've seen a couple news articles over the past decade or two, and they're just kind of giving you their advice, but it's not very helpful because they've never been there. They don't know anything. Right. And so whenever I go to some of these countries, like, for example, Venezuela, I went there during the height of all the craziness. And that might sound crazy, but the thing is, I had a friend there, another Canadian guy who had been living there for 2 years at the time. And he had still been there and he bikes his motorcycle around the entire country. And he's like, hey, man, I know things aren't great in Venezuela. I'm leaving soon for other reasons. But if you want to come down, I can't promise you everything's going to be okay. But I know the situation here. We can stay in my place. We can bike around a little bit. We can see Angel Falls, all these different things. And he was really integrated in the community, and I really trust him. So I went down. But I wouldn't have gone down without a contact like that. And quite often it is the contacts. But of course I get a little bit nervous before that happens. And every single time, it's always the complete opposite. The people are always the friendliest, and they go out of their way to like make you tea and invite you over into their house over for dinner. It's always like that every single time I go to one of these countries that's tourist unfriendly. I'll tell you one a bit of the opposite story, though. I went to this festival in Mexico, just north of Mexico City, and it was called the Bulls of Fire. And it was at the Mexican Pyrotechnics Festival. And you can imagine how safe a Mexican Pyrotechnics Festival is. It's not safe at all. The main event was this thing called Bulls of Fire. And so basically, if you took like the Spanish running of the bulls, where you go down the streets of Pamplona and you have to outrun these bulls. It was like that, but instead of actual bulls, the villagers got together in little groups and cities and things, and they made these like giant steel rebar and paper mache bulls, all bigger than cars, and they pushed them through the city streets. At the end of the day, they'd all get into the main square. Everyone was very drunk at this point off this drink called like pulque, which is a fermented cactus sap that's like so viscous. It's like paint. It's super thick. And they'd fill these bowls full of fireworks, like model rocket engines, things that are like up there with like commercial level fireworks. And they'd run them at people, and you had to run away and dodge the rockets, dodge the fireworks, and people get hurt there every single year, and it's crazy. That was something I wasn't scared originally, but then I got there in the thick of it all, and I was scared. I was able to get good footage, but I'll tell you why I was scared. I knew what was going to happen. I knew the fireworks were going to be shooting around. I knew there was a high chance of getting burned. I knew that they're going to try to run you over with an exploding steel bull. So I had like ski goggles, like a baklava on. I didn't drink anything because I wanted to stay sober. I had my camera and everything. But then what happened is about after 4 hours of this just craziness, I got hit in the chest with a tequila bottle. Someone whipped it from over the crowd and hit me right in the sternum. And then I got scared, man, because that's an element you can't control. I can control where I am for the most. I can't control exactly like where the fireworks are, but at least I have the protection on to know that I'm probably going to be okay. I stayed sober. And then I took a second tequila bottle to the back of the shoulder. And I was like, I'm out of here. Because then you can't, you know, then the bad thing's going to happen. You can't control that. It's just chance. It's just debauchery. It's just humans going a little bit too far with the party. And so I had to bow out right there. And I was legitimately scared because in the pure chaos, that's one thing I could not control. And those things scare me.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that helped make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to ask you, and I don't like to totally, you know, focus on negative things necessarily, but I was going to ask you an opposite, you know, direction. Like, is there a place that you weren't originally afraid of, then became afraid of? And I'm glad you shared that example, because that can happen anywhere. People getting too rowdy, out of hand, through alcohol. That's obviously a worldwide thing. And so it doesn't have to be, you know, if you can avoid that in your own hometown, chances are you can avoid it anywhere in the world. And if that's the biggest problem you're facing, geez, you know, that makes the rest of the world seem a lot less scary for someone who has the desire to go see it, but maybe not the experience. So that's really interesting, man. Also, kind of another unique festival you were talking about. I'd love for you to tell us the story about the Exploding Hammers Festival. Do you have time to tell us that?
Yeah, of course. And I bet you can guess which country that's in as well.
I was going to say, that's right there. That's right there.
Mexico.
Too, man. Oh, my goodness. Mexico.
So I ended up moving to Mexico City for 3 years because there was just so much incredible stuff and a massive disregard for safety and regulation in that country that I just absolutely fell in love with.
Sounds like Florida.
So yeah, exactly. I was I don't even know how I found it. A Mexican friend of mine or follower sent me a small, crappy cell phone video of this guy with a hammer that had homemade, like a sledgehammer that had a homemade explosives on the end of it. And he was slamming it into a loose rock field. And it was like really, it was like Lego potato quality. It was horrible. But I was like, and they're like, oh, we have to find this in Mexico. But no one knew the name of it. No one knew anything. So I was just kind of Googling around like martillos explosivos, like again, exploding hammers. And this little town came up with a festival called Carnaval. That's what the festival was called. And there was like a little like Mexican blog write up about it's only in Spanish. That's like, oh, you know, this small town just north of Mexico City again has this festival every year. And it's called Carnival and they have hammers. And I was like, are you serious? And so I had another Mexican friend who had contacts in that area with the local tourism board. And so I spoke to her and I got the contact there and I asked like, does this actually exist? And they go, yeah, it does exist. But normally we don't take tourists there. I'm like, well, you're going to take this tourist there. So we organized a plan and I went up there and it's a really kind of a crazy story. So the village itself is named after John the Baptist and like from the Bible. And this is their version of a festival for him. And I guess how it came to be the Exploding Hammer Festival. Originally, it was just a parade to honor the guy and with fireworks and stuff. And then one day someone put a firework on a hammer. And then one day someone like wanted to make their own explosives because they're too expensive to get fireworks or something. So made their own homemade explosives by buying like home hardware powders and liquids and stuff or whatever, and then put that at the end and start slamming these hammers down the street in this small town. But they kept them blowing out windows and like setting off car alarms. So they decided to kind of axe the parade and just have the Exploding Hammer Festival, aka Carnaval, in this rock field. And it's been going on for decades now, kind of like incognito. And so I went there, again, didn't know what to expect, and it was crazy, man. At least there, there's a firm rule not to drink. But basically, so like I said, these guys they make these homemade explosives out of some kind of powder. And it's not like an explosive you can light. Like they were showing you put a lighter to it, it doesn't light. It's impact sensitive. So if you hit it with a rock, for example, it'll go bang. So it's not really flammable. It makes a massive, massive shockwave. And I watched these guys put like these little like packets. They're maybe the size of like barbecue charcoal, and they put one on and makes a pretty big bang. They put two and three, and they were getting up to like 15 of these packs. And when you're blasting these things, man, like you see the shockwave, like, you know, those slow motion ripples you see in like these explosion videos. It was like that. And like the dirt would come out of the rock around these explosive places. And it wasn't just one circle. Like there was many of these circles. So I'm here with my like construction grade earplugs. These dudes are just balling up Kleenex and putting them in their ears. And my ears were throbbing. I can't imagine the dudes actually exploding these hammers. And I was talking to like the tourism lady who was there with me, kind of very shocked that I was enjoying this at all. And I was like, so people got hurt? Like, yeah, the guy lost his arm last year. And all of a sudden, like a hammer starts spinning up overhead and everyone starts laughing. Because again, if the explosion is too big and the guy doesn't hold on, the sledgehammer will go spinning off into the horizon, right? And so you really always have to be watching. I watched a dude blow off his thumb because he didn't, you know, when we swing a sledgehammer down, you kind of keep your hand near the hammer part and you slide it up the handle. He didn't slide it up, so he blew off his freaking thumb. A couple guys with ruptured eardrums as well. And then at the end, I wanted to try a little bit, so I put a couple of little packets on, I think only two, on this little hammer and exploded it. And like it rocked me, like two little packets. Some dudes were doing like 15 to 20. Like it's incredible. And also all these like boys who were maybe 12 are just rocking themselves with these homemade explosives. And all these like little like Latina girls are there with like their short shorts and their skirts and their little crop tops, all watching the boys see who they can blow up the biggest hammer. One of the craziest, craziest moments of my life, man. Yeah. And I was the first one there to, I think, make movies about it. Since then, it's gotten a bit more popular. It's kind of like the curse of this job. If you find something cool and make content, it kind of changes it forever. But yeah, that was definitely a wild experience.
That is freaking chaotic. is what that sounds like. That is
definitely
unbelievable. Blowing off fingers and arms and you know, happy birthday, John the Baptist, or whatever it is, your birthday celebration.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be proud. I'm sure he'd be proud.
Super, super proud. No, that is wild, man. That is absolutely wild. And so that, you know, what's interesting is you mentioned that you found that from like a fan or a friend that just sent you this, you know, this potato quality video. You know, is that your creative process or about what to do next, about how you find the next either project or the next thing to go film? Is it just, you know, this constant flow of inspiration about things you hear about or things people share with you? Or is it more strategic than that? Like, how do you choose what you do next?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because I really don't do what I'm not going to be doing the top five beaches of Bali or anything. I really take time to find these things. Yeah. Cause a lot of I have this, there was a crisis point in my life a few years ago, when I was doing like travel filmmaking and not so much doing this Fearless and Far stuff. And I was like thinking, I was trying to get into my own personal YouTube, and I was thinking about, oh, you know, if I do the top five taco restaurants in Cancun, then I'll get more views. And I just wasn't happy, man. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, why are you choosing to do the things that everyone else are when you are very willing to do the things that people aren't? You're always the guy that's going to eat the bug, you know, go in the abandoned building, whatever it is, find these wild adventures that no one would even dream of or touch the 10-foot pole. Why are you obsessing over, you know, views and clicks of this commercial stuff? And then I changed my travel style. I honestly, unapologetically, I got a sleeve tattoo. I decided I wanted to go film like some of the grossest foods on the planet, which I think at this point in my life, I don't know who has the crown of eating the grossest things on the planet, but I can guarantee you I am pretty close to having the crown of all time.
Well, congratulations, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. My girlfriend isn't so thrilled about it, but right. But I just really love finding the things that no one has found before and showing the world how cool it is. And I guess I say that I could probably add some context to the food thing. So, for example, just in the past 2.5 months. I went hunting with the Hadzabe tribe just a couple weeks ago here in Tanzania. They're the last true hunter-gatherer tribe in Africa, actually, and they're true to it. We went out baboon hunting, believe it or not, and we were these guys are incredible. They like know every chirp in the forest, and they can read the landscape and read the wind and all these things to find these animals. And so we were looking for baboons, and on the way, this guy found a beehive, like African killer beehive, and there was four of these hunters, and they jump up in the tree and start digging out bee honeycomb. And I was like, oh, they're gonna get stung. Didn't care. They like made a little fire, put like some leaves in it, smoked the beehive a little bit, and we're taking out like massive honeycombs out of a killer beehive. And so I'm there. They weren't getting stung. I kind of got in there too. Got a little bit stung. They got a little bit stung, but it was fine. And then they handed me a honeycomb, and I took a bite, and it wasn't actually honey. It was just pure bee larva. So they were eating that. They were harvesting the honey too, but the bugs were just as important. The week before that, I was hanging out with the Maasai, which are a very different tribe here. They wear like the iconic shuka, like red blankets. They're like the grazers of the Serengeti and Ngorongoro area. And cattle is like what they use as currency. And also like it's dowry. It's all these things. Also, they use it for food. But they don't like killing them because it's kind of like their wealth. And so one thing they do is they make small incisions in the cow's neck, and they put the blood into a gourd, and they drink the warm blood for breakfast. And so on our first day, they invited me for a nice Maasai warm blood breakfast out of a smoky old gourd. And not for everybody, I have to say.
Yeah, not for me. Holy cow. That's, no, I commend you though, man. I can't even... How do you stomach this stuff, man? But I mean, it's incredible, the experiences. Is it hard work for you to say yes to some of this stuff, to some of these spontaneous either interactions or you know, snacks, I guess you could say?
Snacks, yeah. It's kind of like snacks. The thing is, like, I have like a sick pleasure for doing this stuff. Honestly, dude, I have no desire to drink blood. That's like on my list of things to do, like there's like getting shot in the face, and then that's like one up above that at the very bottom. But you're there, you're spending like 3-4 days with these amazing people. They do this. Obviously, you know, it doesn't kill anybody. They're like healthy, amazing people. And they tell you the story and why, and they're so excited to have you try it. I know, like, everyone has a different perception of what gross means. And it's only your worldview. You know, like, some people, half this world thinks peanut butter's gross. You know what I mean? I think that shit that Australians eat, Vegemite or Marmite, I think that stuff's gross. And so I think we think blood's gross. They don't think blood's gross. So they drink it, right? So who's right and who's wrong here? I mean, you could probably argue that drinking blood might be a bit more wrong than eating peanut butter. But it's still so subjective, right? So I just don't like to turn down an invitation. And when it means an opportunity to explain to the world and also challenge myself and my preconceptions, and I go for it, right? I go for it. So it's led me to do that. It's led me to eat spider cheese in Germany. It's led me to eat itag in the Philippines, which is a pork that has maggots in it, which is pretty crazy as well. All kinds of good little bits, man.
Jeez.
Not so good.
Jeez, Mike, it's just awesome. It's awesome what you do. I see you explore abandoned places too, which is something that's so much fun, so cool. Can I ask you this? You know, you've got this this incredible YouTube channel that you've built over time and just have all this incredible content on there. What would you say one of the biggest misconceptions people have about you and your lifestyle that you maybe hear a lot on social or on YouTube that you're constantly trying to correct or reframe?
I guess I think it's really easy to think I'm some kind of like jackass wannabe. You know, I do these stunts, I eat these crazy things, and it's like, I think it's easy to maybe for people to think that it's just for shock value. I'm just like another bro with a backwards hat trying to make people go, ugh.
Oh, man.
And it's not really that. Like, I guess I probably... At first, and I mean, you see the content and you're like, wow, this is very extreme. But I am doing it like, I do things I know that aren't going to, I mean, hey, I might get diarrhea for a week or two. That's happened a lot. But I don't do things that are reckless. I don't want to come across as the reckless guy that'll do anything for a stunt or for a million views. That's not me at all. I'm really cautious with a lot of what I do. And also, I've been traveling for a long time. I've eaten a lot of stuff. I've done a lot of things, and I guess I train quite hard to be able to do things always within my ability. And if I feel like it's starting to get outside my ability, I abort. I'm out of there. So for me, I like to take these extreme things and then kind of trick people into learning something. You know, they may, oh my God, this guy's going to drink cow's blood, and then like trick them into learning more about the Maasai and a bit more about the world and a bit more about their assumptions and their misconceptions and their, you know, judgments on another culture. I like to tease all that in too with maybe something a bit more clickable in the beginning.
Having seen some of these bizarre practices, unique festivals, and interesting people, what can you tell us about what kind of people the world is filled with? Are people good from your perspective?
Man, I can't speak highly enough about the experience that I've had in this world. I've been to 75 countries or something. Again, some of the ones that people would never go to. And I don't have bad experiences. I don't have any like, you know, crazy, you know, kidnapping attempts or like being arrested or anything like that. It doesn't exist. The crappiest experiences I've had have always been in like Paris or like Amsterdam or like, you know, these places that are really touristy and you're taken advantage of because there's lots of like, I don't know, let's call them like predators there trying to scam you. But in these countries that you think you might not have a good time in, it's like the opposite, man. The world is filled with kind people who just want to be appreciated, just want the same things as us. And we'd like to divide ourselves based on language and religion and skin color. But dude, we're all the same freaking thing. And I wish more people would travel to know that, because once you start seeing that we're all exactly the same, you just change how you treat people. And you can empathize with with everybody's situation. And we're all like, life is struggle, man. We all, being a human on this planet is just rising and falling and twists and turns. And we all have our own little hero's journey. It doesn't matter where you're from. And if everyone could see that, I think the world would be an amazing place. So I have no bad stories to tell from around the world that aren't from like, the main drag in Paris or something.
Right, right. Now, we find that so often with the folks on the show that we bring on to talk about travel. It's a huge misconception. Some of my worst experiences have been on the street I live on or in the town, you know, at that waiting and you're getting gas or something random where you're not thinking about that stuff. But the times you're kind of ready for something bad to happen, it's not there because it's not real and it doesn't really happen. So,
sorry, let me add one more thing. I did this little like social experiment once. Where I was in Khao San Road in Bangkok. I did two places, Khao San Road in Bangkok, which is like the party street in all of Thailand. And also I did it in Rome in Italy. And what I did is I took a wallet and I stuck it half out of my back pocket with like a couple small bills half out of the wallet. So basically like prime pickpocket territory. And then I got a friend to follow me from afar with like a stealth camera, like filming so that there'd be nobody who could know that I was being filmed. And I wanted to see how long I would last before I got pickpocketed. So Khao San Road would be like prime spot to get pickpocketed, you'd think, because it's just like drunk people and crazy chaos. And then there was a bus that was called the Pickpocket Express, in layman's terms, bus number 7 or something, that went to all the tourist locations in Rome. And so I walked around, took the bus, and had this friend like stealth film me from a distance. And do you think that my wallet got stolen on either one of those things?
All right, might be a trick question. I'm gonna say no, I don't, but you might be like, of course it did. But I don't think it did.
It wasn't. And do you know how many times people came up to me to tell me my wallet was half out of my back pocket? Like 20 times, man. Like the amount of people, the amount of good, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was like a social experiment showing how many good people there are out there versus people who are going to steal your wallet. There was like 20 times more, maybe even more than that because no one jacked the wallet, but there was 20 people who said, hey, excuse me, so your wallet's half out of your back pocket. And it showed me that the world, that's like a prime example, that like the world is good. And that was in a spot where it was supposed to get stolen. Like I was fully expecting it to get stolen. It was the exact opposite.
Man, that story, that theme just has to be told in today's world. It's just over and over. We try to just pound that home. It's like, get out there, see it for yourself. Don't just trust this onslaught of negativity through the news, through just, you know, these attention grabbing mediums. Get out there and see it for yourself. And we're all going to realize, you know, the world is full of people just trying to live, just trying to be good people. And I just appreciate you reiterating that. Do you have a few minutes just to tell us about what you're doing now? Obviously, you're going to continue, you know, your YouTube and continue traveling. And I know you traveled a lot, even in 2020. Can you tell us about your most recent project?
Yeah, so I have been fortunate enough to travel for the past few months. I don't really have a home either, so I've kind of been floating around during this whole COVID time trying to figure out where I can go. But the most recent project that just launched, so I have the YouTube channel, which of course is one of my main things, but I'm working with the podcast network Wondery, who have produced some really, really good podcasts like Dr. Death and like the original Tiger King as well, before it was the Netflix sensation, was actually produced by Wondery. And so we just launched a podcast called Against the Odds. And Against the Odds is telling these stories of these human survival stories where humans rose up to the occasion and to survive again against the odds. And so it's now live. It went live just a few days ago on the 23rd of February. And we'll be doing 5 episodes about the Thai cave rescue. And we got to interview, like I told you, Rick Stanton, which was so cool. So cool. One of the main divers who rescued the kids out of the cave. And I've got a co-host, a girl named Cassie the Pickle, who is a Guinness World Record holder for fastest time to all the countries. And she's telling a story, a different story. And then I'm back. So we're rotating back and forth about 4 or 5 episodes each for this podcast. But I love it, man, because anytime I get to talk about stories of perseverance, survival, people using grit, determination to overcome obstacles in their life. And these are like some of the best ones ever told. Well, I say told like they're fiction, they're fact. And I have to keep on reminding myself that they're not stories that are made up. That's like, these are real things that people did that are just absolutely unbelievable. So it's really cool to be a voice in that podcast, and because it's inspirational for me, and I hope it's also inspirational for other people too.
Oh man, I cannot wait. I love human survival stories, you know. So I absolutely, we've had a handful on this show over the years, and they're just always so exciting. But it's like it's a treat. So to have a whole podcast dedicated to it is going to be really cool. Especially by Wondery. What a great network. So that's going to be fantastic. I just subscribed, so I'll be downloading those and listening. And I will encourage, obviously, all of our listeners to do so. And we'll be plugging everything, you know, your YouTube, your Instagram. Was there anything else that you wanted to share before we head out?
No, that's it. I mean, if anybody really wants to see any of the adventures I spoke about, they're all on my YouTube channel, Fearless and Far. And yeah, check out the podcast. It's premiered in the top 10 list on Apple this week, which is awesome. I mean, I lended my voice. There were so many other talented people who did sound design and the writing, and I'm just one piece of the puzzle. But it all turned out really nice in the end. The Wondery people do such a great job. So YouTube, Fearless and Far, and also Against the Odds on anywhere you get podcasts.
Thanks so much, Mike. You're a professional, just great storyteller, and I appreciate you being on the Adventure Sports Podcast.
It's a pleasure, man. Thank you.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.